I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Today on First Lady and Friends, I had a great conversation with Stephen Lefevre, a dear friend. We go way back, but he is now the chief of staff at World Trade Center, Utah. And we've been on some great trade missions together, and we talk about that. We talk about Ukraine and a lot of other really important things that are going on in the space. Can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. We're back here on First Lady and Friends, and it's been a wild summer, and we've spent some time traveling, and I've had a great adventure. We did a trade mission, and honestly, those are really hard work. They're crazy. They're going all the time, and I've got somebody here who's been on this trade mission with me, with us, and doing just as hard of work, harder work, because he goes out a lot earlier. Stephen Lefevre, Chief of Staff to World Trade Center. Let's get into this, Stephen. How are you doing? How are you recovering from the trade mission?
You know, now it's been a few weeks, so I think we're in a good spot. I know you had a wild ride across the whole experience yourself. So I think we're both back into the swing now. It's summer in Utah. We've got all the 24th festivities coming up this weekend. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, we both kind of missed the entire month of June traveling, but we're back now, and now it's hot. We left and it was cold, and we came back and it was burning up.
That is true. It turns out we are still in a desert, you know?
Turns out, although we did get a little rain yesterday. Happy day. Yeah, let's talk. First of all, let's talk about Stephen. Stephen and I go way back because, Stephen, you were the... what was your title?
Aide-de-camp.
Aide-de-camp. He was the aide-de-camp to the lieutenant governor, Spencer Cox, my husband. And so we've known Stephen for a long time. And so it was really great. We got to know each other many years ago. And then you moved on from that position to do bigger and better and more awesomer things. So talk a little bit. Maybe let's go to the way, way back and let's talk about where you grew up. You have a really fun background.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
No, I consider myself a Davis County kid. You know, my parents were divorced, so mom was more up towards Davis High School area, and my mom, dad was down towards Bountiful High School area. So I really grew up across the county. So that's where I'm from originally. And you're right. We do go back. It was honestly the perfect job right out of college. I just graduated from the University of Utah, was interning in Washington, D.C., and I was fortunate enough to get an offer to come back and work with then Lieutenant Governor Cox. I don't know if you remember this, Abby, but we actually first met when the day that Spencer was appointed as Lieutenant Governor, and they had the press conference in the Gold Room, and they came back. I just remember looking, and he was like deer in the headlights that day.
I think we all were.
And you were at his side, and your kids were so small then, and this was the fresh new Lieutenant Governor, and I remember saying hi and getting to know him a little bit, but then I was finishing up my internship, but then came full circle, and I got to work with him every day for 2 years. So, and in that mix meant baseball games with you. It meant us coordinating on a lot of cool work activities. So yeah, that's just a kind of little path to getting to where we are now, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny. I do remember that was a crazy day. The day that he was appointed, we were very deer in the headlights. We had no idea what was happening. And there's this picture I think I'll always treasure of that moment. Kind of, it was a little snapshot. Well, it was a snapshot in time of my kids at that age, and they were little. And I remember it's Emma Kate, her daughter, is sitting there on the little chair. I mean, she was six. Her little and for perspective, she's 16, so it was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And her little feet dangling off the chair, and my kid sitting there. And I remember just having this time where I was like, you know, I have three boys, so they're crazy. And I think Gav was like 14. And so then, you know, every 2 years, the other boys. And it was a crazy, crazy time. But I remember just being like, don't mess up. Don't say anything. You know, like Gavin is just always in trouble. Like, he's always mischievous. And so I'm like, I'm just trying to like get through this press conference without some catastrophe with the kids. It was a crazy time.
I can imagine. I remember, you know, many of us have heard the stories of how Spencer was selected and kind of the process of how that unfolded. But man, I think the state really lucked out in getting you two in public service. And so now you're still around 10 years later. I love it.
Yeah, that's very kind of you. No, let's go back though. So you got finished. You started there. Where have you gone since then? You left us. You left us sort of midway through. I'm trying to remember what year that was that you left. And then we got a new assistant.
Yeah, so 2017 is when I left. You know, it's the thing is, I feel like in a lot of my professional opportunities, there seems to be like a point where you kind of feel like you've done what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And also that you've probably provided whatever service you can provide in that capacity. And it kind of felt like that moment with the Lieutenant Governor's office. And I went to Qualtrics, actually. It's, you know, the Lieutenant Governor and I at that time had toured their new campus, had met with the leadership there. And it just kind of, you know, caught my attention, this cool, fun tech company. And I'd have all this experience in government, you know, a lot of internships and then that job there in the governor's office. And I thought, well, why don't I try my hand at the private sector and check out, you know,
and actually
this...
make some money.
there is that.
I mean, it's a dirty little secret, but also provides connections.
Yeah.
So that's what's great.
No, exactly. And so I was at Qualtrics, and then from there, got an itch for grad school. Actually, I lied. I had an itch for grad school when I was in the governor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting there searching different graduate schools for international affairs. And after about 2 years at Qualtrics, I just said, you know what? I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. Applied to three schools, went to what was considered my top school, and got my graduate degree in this
space. It's a little place that not many of you have heard, probably, Columbia.
Yeah, you know, New York City during the pandemic.
Yeah, that's right. That's when you were it's so crazy.
I know.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so what's crazy is that I made this big, bold decision to go get student loan debt and pursue a graduate degree that obviously I was interested in, but didn't know exactly what application would have, whether that was in the foreign policy side or international business. But yeah, no, I went there. In fact, actually, we crossed paths again before that. Spencer and you had announced your campaign for governor, and we started the 248 tour.
Yep, you were on that with us.
Yeah, and so just before leaving for graduate school, I got a little campaign experience there with you two, going around to different towns and cities around the state, starting the campaign. But then, yes, I did take a hiatus, left, went off to New York, and was there just, you know, steeped in study for two semesters, well, one and a half until the pandemic hit. And actually, I flew home with a duffel bag just for a family vacation, and then the world shut down.
Wow.
So I ended up living back in my dad's house for the summer and got back into the campaign work with you there. But then I said, you know what? Even if classes are going to be online, I want to be in New York City. I want to be with my peers. I want to be as close, as proximate as I could be to what I'm doing. So I decided to go back, and I did a lot of coursework out of apartments in New York.
In New York.
But, you know, the city really, just to your point of how was that, you know, New York during the pandemic really has kind of, it's an historical thing, mm-hmm. what we saw and witnessed there with just the mass amounts of people that were going through severe illness. And it was, you know, just the images on the TV. Mm-hmm. But then really the city, and this is what I think's a real testament to people, the city really morphed. Mm-hmm. It said, you know what, we do have very severe restrictions, but we can be outside. Mm-hmm. We can dine outside. We can spend time in parks. So you should have seen New York without tourists. But the parks and the outdoor eating areas were full and lively. And mm-hmm. I had just the best of times, truly.
Mm. Oh, I love that. You know, we were in New York I mean, I think it was shortly after a lot of the restrictions had been lifted. And I remember, like, it was crazy. It was still like you were trying to show cards at the restaurants, you know, the vaccine cards, and some restaurants did. So, I mean, it was crazy, but I saw a little bit of that. Also, even now, I think this is really interesting that a lot of cities, we were talking to people in London and some of these other big cities that we've been to across the world, and it was there. What we heard is most of them are still down about 30% of people, because a lot of people didn't come back to the offices. So a lot of these high-rise buildings, these office buildings in New York and other places like that, really aren't back, which I think is really fascinating, because Salt Lake is up 30%. What do you think about that?
Yeah, a reshuffling occurred. You know, I know there was an exodus from New York to Florida. A lot of people wanted the more open space, less restrictions, lower taxes. So I do think, and, you know, we talk about this a lot, you know, as far as state policy, but mm-hmm. the impacts of people moving in. You know, I quote this stat all the time that over the census 2010 to 2020, Utah was the fastest growing state, 18.4% growth. And that is just that if you start to play that out, what that means, right, on transportation, what that means mm-hmm. for water, what that means for housing. Yeah, no, there was definitely a reshuffling. And I can tell you just an anecdotal story. I had friends who took advantage of the people leaving the city. And during college, they were getting crazy cheap rents in Soho, or the West Village, some of these just glitzy, glamoury places in the city that you would never be able to live as a student if it were not for a pandemic. So yeah, there's definitely been a shuffle both then and that's continued to some degree.
Yeah, and I think we saw that too with education. A lot of people were leaving. You know, you talk about sunshine and lower taxes and different, you know, being outside and those kinds of things. We have a little bit of that there here. We don't have the beaches and the stuff that they have in Florida.
But mountains, of course.
We have mountains and all those kinds of things. But, you know, what we, you know, heard from a lot of folks is, and I think we've seen this in the numbers as well, is that, you know, that because our schools were open, there's a lot of places in New York, Virginia. We had a lot of people come from Virginia, you know, D.C. area and stuff, where the schools were still closed, especially all during like the end of 2020 and 2021. And we had a lot of people that came here that either had second homes in Park City and they've just stayed. And that's what's crazy, because our growth is happening. They didn't go back.
No, I mean, people joke all the time as immigrants to Utah that, you know, once you get a taste, it's so hard to leave it. And so that's what we're seeing.
Yeah. And which causes its own, you know, unique set of challenges.
It does. And, you know, your administration, the focus away from quote unquote development to quote unquote opportunity, mm-hmm. I think that's key. And so what can we do to utilize these new people and also make sure that everyone still has the same opportunities or even better opportunities than before?
And the quality of life still stays high.
Exactly.
You know, that's always in the forefront of our minds, is, you know, making sure that that it's still attractive, because even when all these other people come, and, you know, making sure that we still live the way we want to live and that kind of thing. So it's been great.
Yep.
So, okay. So then you got back from Columbia and then what?
Yeah. You know, at Columbia, my studies were a lot in diplomacy, in war. And so I just anticipated, you know, going to Washington, D.C. I figured that's where I'd end up. I actually had a few, you know, prospective jobs. And so it was kind of waiting through the decision what to do after grad school in New York. And I'd had this great mentor throughout grad school, even before, and that was Miles Hansen, which mm-hmm. is the CEO at World Trade Center here. He had spent time in the Foreign Service and then in the National Security Council in the White House. And so he had recommended Columbia to me. He'd mentored me throughout the process. He caught wind that I was open to moving back to Utah and essentially pulled me aside and said, hey, what do you think about joining World Trade Center? And it was a bit of a leap of faith in that I was ready for an experience, you know, on the national stage, right? Because I study international affairs and states do a lot of engagement. But, you know, as you know, the governor, engages from a state level. Yeah. But he's not involved in foreign policy decisions really at the large, at the higher levels. And so that's where I thought I'd be. I ended up here, and it's been a wild ride. The last 2 years, I just hit my 2 year mark. So I would not have expected even a fraction of the experiences I've had. And so it ended up being a really good decision to come back. And so far, so good.
I love that. That's so fun. You always kind of end up where you're supposed to be, or you know, at least in this moment. So we're really excited to have you here and have you back. And I want to talk a little bit more about what World Trade Center is and what it does and what you've been up to when we come right back.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back here on First Lady and Friends, and we're talking to Stephen Lefevre. He's the chief of staff at World Trade Center. We've been world traveling together, and it's been really great. Stephen's a great friend, great human, and we've had a lot of fun together. Like I said, I want to get into World Trade Center because I don't think very many people know that we have a World Trade Center, Utah. So talk maybe a little bit about what World Trade Center is, how it's connected with the one that people probably know more in New York, or at least World Trade Center buildings they've heard of, obviously, from 9/11. But talk a little bit about what World Trade Center is here in Utah and what your mission is.
Well, likely when you hear World Trade Center, you think you know what you're thinking about. And so that's a blessing and a curse, right? Yeah. Because World Trade Center has a ubiquitous brand. Everyone seems to know it. I mean, it's also three words that if you just think about it and have some common sense, yeah, you can put together. But really what's the curse part of that is World Trade Centers are all very different. Mm-hmm. Essentially what happens is you franchise rights to the brand. And then you are essentially a startup, right? You're your own nonprofit to do with it as you will. A lot of World Trade Centers are actually real estate plays. That's why New York City, the World Trade Center buildings, right? They rent the buildings out to companies, and it's, you know, essentially a place for trade. And different World Trade Centers have different models. We started about 15 years ago. The governor at the time, thought we should think more globally and get a little more private sector focus on international business. And so we started it then. And since then, we're about to get our fourth CEO. Mm-hmm. And so each CEO has kind of built it up over the course of 15 years. And so what we are, and very simply, is we are a trade promotion agency that's contracted by the state of Utah. So we work with the governor's office. We work with the legislature to do trade promotion for the state. That's both the state as a whole, but also individual companies within the state. On the other side of the equation, we're a business organization. So we have members, like a chamber of commerce in some ways. And we work with any and all Utah businesses we can to help them along their international growth journey. And so that's kind of what we are fundamentally, a trade promotion agency and a international business organization.
Yeah, and I think that's great. I'm so glad you explained that because, I mean, even I've been working with you a long time, and that's starting to make sense based on what I know about you. But, you know, great people. And Miles, you talked about Miles being a mentor, just a great human. We're going to miss him there. But I think your new guy is going to be amazing because I know him as well. But let's talk a little bit about these trade missions. It's interesting. We were in this last trade mission and in England and Paris, or France. And I thought it was really interesting that, you know, Maybe talk a little bit about the shift in and maybe the role that states are playing in trade, maybe because of some of the log jams, maybe I'll call it, I'll try to be nice about it, at the federal level with trade, and kind of what that means for states maybe taking on. I mean, because we signed some agreements with these countries as a state to do trade. So we're a little bit bypassing the federal mess and trying to just kind of contract. I mean, I think countries, maybe you can explain it, countries are going to states to try to do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's maybe two ways to look at it. I think for as long as I've been around or anybody else, states are very proactive in engaging the world, essentially saying, build your factory in my state, open your office in my state, right? So there's this competition among states to go and get some of these great international companies or investments, for example. So there's that's one end of the equation. That's why we do trade missions. It's not just competitive. We're also trying to put Utah on the map, right? So a place like France maybe is aware of New York City. They're aware of Los Angeles, maybe Austin, Texas or something, but maybe Utah hasn't registered. And so a lot of the development of that trade mission is helping them understand that Utah is one of the best states for business, one of the best states for startups, et cetera, just kind of helping them frame in their mind Utah as a place to look to and potentially explore opportunities in. The other side of the equation, which you're referring to, and this was very stark with the United Kingdom, they had a big thing called Brexit occur. And so with their vote to leave the European Union, they're a bit in they're in a weird spot when it comes to trade, because they now have to go and engage as the United Kingdom and not as part of the EU bloc. And so essentially they made a decision while they're still negotiating Brexit that in the United States, primarily they should go engage states directly because there's not been passed a UK-US free trade agreement. That's something that people are working on, but it hasn't moved much. So they essentially picked a handful of states they want to go and proactively build relationships with, and Utah was one of them. And so that's been the MOU that you signed in London, which was a really cool setting. You're in the old Admiralty building, which is Winston Churchill's old office. And so really cool setting, great photo op, and the opportunity to kind of showcase this, you know, budding relationship between Utah and the UK. So yeah, there's that you can kind of come at it from both angles, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's been a really interesting, eye-opening for me. I think it's fascinating. I'm absolutely fascinated with the work that's going on with World Trade Center and how that connects with the state and the things that we're trying to get done. So sometimes I think people have the mistaken idea that these are vacations. And let me just maybe just talk a little bit about from a scheduling perspective, because it's crazy what you guys put together. And I don't think we had like 2 minutes that we sat down for about 2 weeks. But talk a little bit about that scheduling and how these trade missions kind of come about.
Yeah, I mean, various ways they do come about. You know, for example, we're heading to Mexico later this year. That's
And I will say with Mexico, it's really interesting. We went to Mexico last year, and we had such an interesting, we had interesting conversations, and we had interesting work that we did there. And I think Spencer and I walked away from that, and both of our respective teams walked away from it and said, we probably need to. Because it was such a great connecting point, and there's so many businesses that kind of want to come out of Asia and get some of their manufacturing and things out of different areas in China and stuff like that. Mexico is such a great place for that, and we started to make those connections. And so I think going back to Mexico was very intentional. That's, we don't usually go to the same places, and we try to like make sure that we're making different connections. But anyway, I just wanted to clarify. That's why we're going back to Mexico.
Yeah, no, good. And to that point, the reason we are doing Mexico is that's leadership on behalf of you and Governor Cox, right? It's something you view as an important priority for the state for various reasons, one of which is that our largest immigrant community is from Mexico, right? So, I mean, there's a constituency element to this, I'm sure, as well as just a lot of the great potential business relationships and whatnot. So, yes, that's a good way to showcase why you might go somewhere. Mexico, that's the why. The why with the UK and France was various reasons. One was that they've been courting us for 2 years on this MOU. You know, London is a very attractive market because they speak our same language. They interact in business very similar to us. So London's always been an attractive place. And so I think there was a lot of pent-up demand for going there. France was around the air show, which we go to quite a bit. And so the governor had mentioned wanting to build out around the air show and be able to utilize that opportunity to engage more broadly. So there's different whys in what you do and where you pick to go. But to your first question about it being a boondoggle, for example, these are intensive. These are designed for impact. They're months and months of planning. And of course, they're also a little fun. Why not? Why shouldn't they be fun? But no, I think you'll see after every trade mission, we produce a report, essentially, or a recap next steps document that is public. You can see them. And that shows just the volume of meetings we have, the substantial partners we're engaging with, the really deep dive conversations we're having. And we also report out on business opportunities that come out of these. And so it's very clear we can show you that these are they're meant for impact. And we have a lot of we've got a lot we can tell you if you want to ask us about them, because we don't think at all that they're a boondoggle.
Yeah, no, that's one thing we've gotten. But really, for the most part, I think people understand that. Strategically, again, we try to strategically find these places where we have the most impact and connection, and the things we can learn and that they can learn from us. We did one last fall to Israel and the UAE. And so maybe, I guess to me, it was fascinating. And one of the big things, besides the business connections that you all have and that we're, again, those connections with legislators, those connections with businesses in the state, the state itself, making those connections with different government entities there. One of the things I thought was really interesting with the Israel and when we spent time in Dubai, it was the water issue. So we were there last year, and you think about what was going on last year. We were going into this fall of where we'd had just terrible drought for the last several years and just the really tough water situation we're in, the Great Salt Lake, everything's happening. And I think it was really so many great conversations about the water. Talk a little bit about maybe some of the stuff that we did around water there.
Yeah. So the Unified Economic Opportunity Commission, which meets, and that goes to our earlier discussion on development versus opportunity. Yeah. There's been a shift, and under Governor Cox with Speaker Wilson and President Adams, their leadership is saying, let's be unified and let's work together to make sure we're taking care of the biggest problems that face our state. Water's a big one. And we've seen a lot of activity around the Great Salt Lake recently. I think with our trip to the Middle East, there was an assumption that we had some things to learn, right? Mm-hmm. You look at Israel, for example, and they do a lot of desalination. So they're able to get a lot of water through that process. Unfortunately, we don't have the ability to do that here. But California does. Mm-hmm. And so you start thinking through unique ways to fix your water problems, and you see how other people are tackling these issues. And so I wasn't along in a lot of the water meetings, but I can say that we do as a benefit of these trips beyond business connections, we do try and look for ways to learn from the places we go, right? Mm-hmm. They're doing things, for example, France has a lot of nuclear energy. So we're trying to see if we can't learn from what they're doing and apply some of that here in Utah, because for all the innovation that comes out of this state, there's a whole world out there that has a lot of innovation too that we can hopefully absorb and maybe make our own if you can.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, our goal here, especially, in my world, is to get proximate and to learn, from people that have a different story, and it's unique. I've loved the opportunities. I mean, and of course we on First Lady and Friends, we had we did a podcast with our friend Deanna Davison in the UK, and it's really fun to get to know somebody that, you know, in the government there, and this woman who's young and working on things, and it was really fascinating to me. I will say, just as an aside, that, you know, we did that podcast and we put it up on our socials, and, you know, I put it up and I shared it on mine, and I started getting all these like really negative, nasty comments from, I'm assuming, her constituents. And I was like, oh, well, we all have the same problem, right? Bless her heart for doing this. And I, you know, proud of her for doing what she's doing. She's working really hard, and, you know, I don't really know a lot of her political affiliations, but I just thought, well, we all have to work on this disagreeing better, right?
Yeah, we do disagree better. And also the fact that, you know, around the world we have these government systems, you know, that allow for constituencies to be loud, to be vocal, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that is so great about our system, is it allows us to have that disagreement, but it doesn't have to turn into disdain or anything of that nature. I know that's a big focus that you're working on, is how to disagree better, and, you know, that just kind of harkening back a little bit to our conversation of my time in New York, that was what was so fascinating. I was going from liberal New York to conservative Utah, mm-hmm. and I have friends in both places, and I would have all these conversations, and I would find myself kind of learning the counter talking points to the other.
Those are great skills to have, though, right?
It was very interesting. I'd come back to Utah with talking points from my friends on the left, and I'd say, well, have you thought about this?
Yeah.
And so that was interesting. So,
no, I love that. I actually really love that. We've as we've been talking about this, disagreeing better with the National Governors Association and our chairship there, We were thinking about, of course, I always think about kids and getting upstream of the problems, because I think adults sometimes are too hard to work with. So I always think about kids, because they're certainly better at some of this stuff than we are. And talk about the curriculum, and what we know is that when kids learn, you know, you think about your high school day. I don't know. I never did speech and debate. I wish I would have. But, you know, those speech and debate skills where you have to take somebody else's point of view, or, you know, just some, you get, there's two sides to a thing and you get just randomly assigned one of those sides. Whether you believe it or not, you have to argue for that side and you have to figure it out. So actually learning somebody else's perspective helps in, you know, first of all, it probably helps to, you know, solidify your own. If not, you know, you may find they can persuade you. If you want to, and changing your mind is great. That means you're learning.
No, I agree. All true. And that's some of the stuff we learn when we're abroad too, right? And back to your conversation with Deanna Davison, she's a part of the Ministry of Leveling Up, right?
Yeah.
And
yep.
So that's a lot of what she's focused on, is how to help people on the margins. And that's one of the things I appreciate about you. The Show Up Initiative, the First Lady's team. You have a great team. All the work that you put into, and we just saw some of the heart on your sleeve there, or heard some of the heart on your sleeve there with kids. And I saw it in action also with Special Olympians. And you just go down the list, and there are just so many people that we can care about. Yep. And they're all over the world, and they're also here at home.
Yep. No, I love that. Okay, we're going to take a break and be right back. We're back here with Stephen Lefevre, Chief of Staff to World Trade Center. World Trade Center is getting some new leadership. Are you excited? Like, what happens when you get a new director?
This is literally bittersweet. Yeah. I'd mentioned my appreciation, my respect for Miles Hansen, and Jonathan Friedman, who is our new incoming CEO.
I didn't know if I dared to say it. I don't know if it had been announced yet.
It's announced. We're good to go. In fact, we had our board meeting yesterday to make it official. So we're moving forward. He'll start officially on July 31st. But Miles, great mentor. Wish him all the best in what he does next. You know, he spent 5 years here building institution building that I mentioned before, and helping kind of solidify some of what World Trade Center does and kind of expanding into some new areas. And so, but with Jonathan, he's someone I've gotten to know pretty well over the last year. And a lot of that's around Ukraine.
Yep.
He is the honorary consul and has been for about 15 years. So
he never knew that he was actually going to have to do some major lifting in that role. I don't think, I mean, it's honorary for a reason, but he's actually been pivotal in the stuff we've done with Ukraine. He's amazing.
Yeah. For 13 years, he probably did very little, you know, once in a while, a passport issue or something, but the last two, he's been busy. In fact, I remember talking to him earlier, near the start of the full scale invasion in February of 2022. And he said he was getting just dozens and dozens of applications to go join the legions.
Wow.
So Utahns wanting to go fight on the front lines out in Ukraine. So that was, I'm sure, a very unique experience. But yeah, Jonathan got to know him really well and did so, in a very unique trip to Ukraine that we did back in May. So spent a week traveling from Warsaw into Kyiv and back out. We had to do that by bus crossing the border because you can't fly directly into Ukraine. So yeah, I've spent some time with him already. I think very highly of him, similar to the way I do about Miles. And so we're gonna be in good hands.
Yeah.
I think our board is very very much looking forward to serving with him and to supporting him. And Miles is also a board member now, so he'll continue to do that. So yeah, looking forward to having Jonathan start more in full in a week or so.
Yeah, let's go back to Miles. I have to say, like, Miles is probably, I mean, we've spent a lot of time in conversation during these trade missions, and like, Miles is somebody that I just really, really admire. He's exactly what you talked about. Like, he's learned so much from the experiences he's had overseas, a lot of in the Middle East, in Qatar, or Qatar, he says. He pronounces it Qatar, so I'll say it that way. He's lived a lot of really interesting places in the Middle East and around Asia. I just think he just has an incredible skill set and just like one of the most genuinely good humans I've ever met. Fantastic.
Everything you say is true. I want to read his memoir someday.
I know.
You know, I hear stories here and there of him and his wife, Sienna, backpacking across Afghanistan or getting their camera taken away in Iran because it had photos of things that were secretive or being requested, I guess, by government officials. So just really fun things that I'm sure if you were to unpack, a lot of good nuggets.
Yeah, I'll buy that book. I will buy that book. Yeah, he's great. And again, Jonathan Friedman, again, a dear friend who's been on some of these trade missions too. I mean, he was in Mexico with us and just a stellar human. He and his wife, Leanne, are just dear friends. So maybe let's talk a little bit about where do you think this goes from here? Where does this go for you, and where does it go for World Trade Center?
Yeah. You know, I've spent a lot of time in the political arena, and the political answer is, you know, I'm really happy where I'm at. I'm going to continue doing my best to serve World Trade Center. And a lot of that is true. Truthfully, yeah. I'm Europe trade mission was taxing. We had a lot of people and a lot of moving parts. This Mexico trade mission, I think, will be a little bit more targeted, more focused, and that I think I'm looking forward to. But truthfully, the reason I'm in this job, my why, if you will, is that I actually kind of my interest was sparked when I was in the lieutenant governor's office. You know, in that capacity, Spencer would host different dignitaries. And I just love that exchange, the ability for Utah to engage the world. And so in this capacity, I get to do that every day. And I get to do that in so many. I've had so many interesting stories, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's hosting what's now become a very well-known China conference, and a lot of people in DC and elsewhere know about it, where we had different experts, including our board chair, who's former ambassador to China, speak to the current state of U.S.-China relations, which are a hot button issue, you know, and our very whirlwind trip through Ukraine, and so just. That I, as a Utahn, you know, we started with my roots in Davis County. I'm from Utah. You know, I love this state. So for me to go and help the world understand that Utah can punch above its weight, mm-hmm. that we have a lot to offer, and conversely, that we have a lot to go learn from the world, that I can be kind of in the middle of that is just it's really thrilling. And so I don't anticipate moving on just yet. I definitely want to see Jonathan in action because I think he has a lot to bring our organization. Mm-hmm. He has a business background, right? Miles, for all of his pros and positives, his background is in diplomacy. And he really learned, and I saw this, he learned business very well. So mm-hmm. it's something he definitely now knows. But Jonathan has been steeped in it. He started a business. He's traveled the world from Maalouf, mm-hmm. India, China, Mexico, et cetera. So I think he has a lot to bring to the table, and I have a lot to learn from him. And we love working together with the governor's team. We love working together with the legislature. We love working together with, I was just in our board meeting talking to Jeremy Andrus, the mm-hmm. CEO of Traeger Grills, right? Mm-hmm. We just get to work with really cool people to share Utah's message with the world. And so that to me, I really love it.
I love that. That's so cool. Okay. Before I let you go, I want you to talk a little bit more. You've mentioned it briefly, but this trip to Ukraine was pretty incredible. Maybe just a couple of highlights. I mean, I know you met President Zelensky, you took some Utah companies are doing some really great things. Maybe just talk a little bit about the situation there and maybe where you see it going. I don't know.
Yeah. As someone who studied international affairs, funny enough, my last paper in grad school, it was a paper advising Zelensky on what to do in the Donbass. This was pre-full-scale invasion. So it's something I'd actually studied academically before.
Wow.
And then when the full-scale invasion happened, I was able to think back through a lot of my studies. And we actually had a board meeting that morning, and it just was wild to think that this actually happened. I think on a personal level, what really got to me was if you understand the magnitude of the decision that Russia made, mm-hmm. That President Putin made in invading a sovereign country that is Ukraine. It's just, this is stuff that we haven't seen in 50 plus years. And so I think that is just, it really, seared in people's minds, including my own. So long story short, we held the rally at the Capitol. Governor mm-hmm. Cox, Owen Fuller, Jonathan Friedman, others were engaged in showing solidarity with Ukraine. These are our fellow people. These are our brothers, our sisters. A lot of them have roots or connections to Utah. And so we wanted to show our solidarity. We lit up the Capitol. Vivint Arena was lit up in blue and gold. And so the gold is for the wheat fields mm-hmm. and the blue is for the sky. Yeah. And so that, I guess, maybe we'll segue into the trip. We had to bus in to Kyiv from Warsaw. And so just after crossing the border and finally being in Ukraine, after having watched all the events unfold for a year or so on the television, just being there and looking out and seeing that this is a country in war. Mm-hmm. And that was palpable. That was in your face because you had an air raid siren app on your phone and it would go off multiple mm-hmm. times a day, essentially saying shelter, there is some type of object in the air, whether it's a drone or a missile. And so that was something we all got used to doing is responding to those apps. And so our app alerts. So yeah, we had a group of about 30 of us. We went in, we met with about 10 government ministers and really were engaging as much as we could. And eventually it led to us having a sit down with the president and his team. And my takeaway is that these are some scrappy people. Mm. They are looking for opportunities amidst every challenge. These are people that so badly want to be more like us Americans. And so I'm rooting for them unapologetically. I know there's some politics to this, but I think it's in our interest, our national interest, for us to continue to root for them, to help them where we can. And so I understand, again, I've studied this. I understand there are tripwires. I understand there are difficulties and complexities to this and mm-hmm. the way that the president and our U.S. foreign policy apparatus kind of approaches this. But that all being said, President Zelensky in that meeting looked like a tired man, a determined man, and a humble man. And so my general thoughts are that we have a lot to learn from Ukraine, and that engagement is continuing. We anticipate inbound visits from, for example, their Minister of Digital Transformation. Crazy to think that Ukraine is actually ahead of us in some ways. You don't realize this, but they're, and this is something Owen Fuller is working a lot on, but they have a state system where passports are digital, for example, right? We don't have that.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think that they're ahead of us in some way. So Minister of Digital Transformation, we would hope to have him here. We've already started having return visits that are more targeted in certain areas. And so I do see us having a really great relationship going forward. And we really put Utah on the map.
Yeah.
They started to realize that Utah cares about them and loves them. And I'm glad to have been a part of that and had great partners in doing that, including President Adams and others who showed that Utah is a loving, caring place.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And, you know, there's so many connections, like you said. I mean, I just think, I saw that as a little tiny bit of how we were involved. But yeah, I think good people everywhere across this globe. And the more we get to know them, we have this shared humanity and we can always work together on these things. So thank you again for being here. Thanks for telling your story. We loved having you. And on to the next trade mission. Let's do it.
Here we go. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephen.
Bye-bye.
You can find more information about World Trade Center Utah at wcutah.com. Thanks for being a friend.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.